Spinning your dial and joining us here. I'm watching some video on MSNBC about these tornadoes that hit Oklahoma City, and I, you know, this death and destruction that has occurred in this country. What is it? About 500 people dead so far this spring with just this outbreak of tornadoes. It's horrible. You look at the stuff on the tube and see the power of these storms. The one that hit Joplin now, they're saying, was an EF5, which I believe is the highest it can go on the scale that they have been using. 200-mile-an-hour tornado, death and destruction. When I was a kid growing up, I lived at the tail end of Tornado Alley in northwest Ohio, and we were always told to get into the southwest corner of your basement. Of course, we all had basements. The southwest corner of your basement if there was a tornado warning. And the reason the southwest corner is because the tornadoes came from the southwest. It would blow everything over and away from you. And, you know, we had tornado drills. But I just wonder, I wish Pat Robertson or somebody in the religious community of evangelicals would explain to us why God is so pissed off that he's killing hundreds of people in the Bible Belt. They always have an explanation for this kind of death and destruction if it happens in New York or San Francisco or Miami or New Orleans. All I hear from these people now is crickets. Where are the evangelical big mouths? Where are they? Where's Franklin Graham? Does this have anything to do, Franklin, with Muslims? Or gay folk? Or liberals? This hour is sponsored by James Herlihy. Thank you, James. I just wish a Christian evangelical would step out of the muck and tell me why their God is so pissed off and so infuriated at people in Arkansas and Missouri and Oklahoma and Texas that he's decided to murder hundreds of them. Well, maybe tomorrow, huh? This is Bob Dylan's 70th birthday. When I saw that New York Times this morning, I just about fell off my chair at the kitchen table this morning, drinking coffee, and I picked this up on the editorial page. Today is Bob Dylan's 70th birthday. John Lennon would have turned 70 last October. Joan Baez turned 70 in January. Paul Simon will reach 70 before the end of the year. Next year, Paul McCartney turned 70. Aretha Franklin turned 70. Carole King, Brian Wilson, Lou Reed, Jimi Hendrix and Jerry Garcia would have also have turned 70 in 2012. What the hell is going on? 70? Ah. Wow. The editorial was about how all these rock and rollers, what they had been exposed to, they're all about the same age, these legends of rock. And it was talking about The writer of the column said that he thinks the explanation for this striking cluster of musical talent lies in a critical factor of biography. All those artists turned 14 around 1955, 1956, when rock and roll was first erupting. And those 14th birthdays were the truly historic ones. As the writer said at the time, 14 is a formative age, especially for people growing up in social contexts framed by pop culture. You're in the ninth grade. You're confronting the tyrannies of sex and adulthood. Struggling to figure out what kind of adult you like to be. And you turn to the cultural products most important to your day as sources of cool. For these people, when Robert Zimmerman and Bob Dylan turned 14, Elvis Presley was releasing his early records, including Mystery Train. McCartney said, after he heard Presley, quote, "It was Elvis who really got me hooked on beat music." Interesting. You ought to check it out. 70. Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, John Lennon would have been, Paul Simon, George Clinton. Next year it'll be McCartney, Aretha Franklin, Carole King, Brian Wilson, Lou Reed. I'm surprised Lou Reed made it past 40. But 70? Ay, ay, ay. Scary spring. This has just been very scary stuff. These violent storms that just keep following the same path. And I realize the meteorological explanations for it, sure. But man. Benjamin Netanyahu, whose government, the Israeli government, has had their hand in Uncle Sam's pocket for half a century, got to address the U.S. Congress today, a joint session. My sources tell me the only person who didn't show up was Ron Paul. And that Benjamin Netanyahu, when he categorically stated his opposition to what Obama said, was it yesterday, day before, that in order to secure peace in that part of the world, Israel, Palestine, a return to the 1967 borders would be almost, of Israel, would be almost a bottom line necessity. Of course, he said that, Obama did on one day, and then the next day he addresses AIPAC, the Israeli lobby that owns outright the U.S. Congress, and kind of backpedaled. But Benjamin Netanyahu, a foreign head of state, addresses the United States Congress, joint session today, and more or less gives the middle finger to a United States president. Netanyahu, and that's not bad enough. Netanyahu more or less says Obama can go straight to hell. There's not going to be a return to the 67 borders. And these freaks in the U.S. Congress stand up and applaud him. They applaud a foreign head of state. I don't care if he's from Israel or Timbuktu. A foreign head of state who contravenes the President of the United States. And these paid for shills. Who owns these members of Congress? My God. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. Is it corporatism that owns them? Capitalism that owns them? The oil industry? Israel? Who owns them? They don't belong to us. It's not our Congress. So a foreign head of state stands there and busts up on the President of the United States, who, in my opinion, is genuinely trying to seek peace. Give it up, Brock. It's never, ever going to happen. Not there. And because it's never going to happen, the United States is always going to have its ass in a meat grinder. Always. Always. Because of that part of the world. Because 60 years ago, the United States didn't assert a few simple rules to this new state. Yeah, you can exist, but these people are going to exist too. Now everybody get along or we'll nuke the whole goddamn bunch of you. Anyone who is interested in the political pulse in this country is watching what's going on tonight in New York's 26th congressional district, where the Republican candidate is strictly on board with Paul Ryan to destroy Medicare, and the Democratic candidate is pointing that out, and it's become a referendum. This is a district, the 26th district, that has been Republican since God was a teenager. And it'll be curious to see. If you hear any results, send me an email. We are waiting to get some results ourselves. But if you hear something, it'd be great if you let us know. A lawmaker in Kansas, a Republican, says women should plan ahead for needing an abortion in case they're raped. You should plan ahead. This was a Think Progress, I think. This anti-women's privacy tidal wave that is the result of the 2010 elections has produced nearly 1,000 bills in various legislatures this year to deny women the essential basic element of a right to privacy. Now, they call them anti-choice bills, which really pisses me off. I never could figure out why the pro-women's privacy lobby insists on calling it the right to choose or the right of choice. That's not what it's about. It's a right to privacy. And I think if it were framed, this is what gets me about Democrats. What are they thinking? Why can't they frame it the way the Supreme Court made the ruling? A woman has a right to privacy. Any person has a right to privacy. But no, you know, it's pro-choice, anti-choice. And that gives rise to the bumper stickers. It's a baby, not a choice. What the hell is wrong with Democrats? Really? But I digress. Nearly 1,000 anti-women's privacy bills have been introduced in legislatures around the country. When Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, Republican, took office last year, he called on the state legislature to create what he called a culture of life. Now, last time I checked, Kansas still has a death penalty, and the congressional delegation from Congress, or from Kansas, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have the facts right in front of me here, but I'll take a wild guess. They're very much in favor of invading other countries and murdering women and children and babies and men and boys and old people and young people. No problem with that. So Sam Brownback is a goddamn liar when he talks about a culture of life. What they're talking about is a culture of putting women in their place by denying them the right to privacy with their doctor. And in the last 15 minutes of their annual session, the state legislature delivered. They passed a law to ban insurance companies from offering abortion coverage in their general health plans. But I thought that the Republicans were against government intrusion into the private sphere, into capitalism or private enterprise. Oh, yes, Mike, they are, but not where it concerns the re-subjugation of women. These goddamn women are too uppity, you know, with all the look at how many of them are running for public office. Look how many of them are judges. Look how many of them are business executives. You're going to tell the head of a multi-billion-dollar corporation that she doesn't have the right to privacy to sit down with her doctor and maybe her male counterpart and her concept of what's right and wrong, and she doesn't have the privacy to make her own decision as to whether or not she wants to abort? Really? Yes, that's what Republicans say. During the House debate, this Representative Pete DeGraff, a Republican from Mulvane, Kansas, said, and he supports the bill denying women the right to privacy. He said, we do need to plan ahead, don't we, in life? Another member of Congress said, and so women need to plan ahead for issues that they have no control over with a pregnancy? And DeGraff said, I have a spare tire on my car. I have life insurance. I have lots of things that I plan ahead for. So there you go. If you're a woman in Kansas, plan ahead. You may be raped. You may have forced sex when you're 12 years old from your father or stepfather. You got to plan ahead, girls. Now, I don't know how you plan ahead. Oh, I know how you plan ahead. Carry a goddamn gun. And when your rapist or your stepfather or your daddy approaches and he has that look in his eye, shoot him.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
With early returns, and it looks like the Democratic candidate has a slight lead. That would be, what is her name? Hochul? Corwin is the Republican. Hochul is the Democrat, and Davis is the teabagger. So we will try to watch that. I'm very curious as to what's going to happen in that that district. It just freaks me out. This what these Republicans try to do across the country to relate rape with having a spare on your tire or a spare tire on your car. I mean, what were these guys, these Republicans, were they molested by their mothers? Is that why they are so anti-woman? Or does this have to do with their own molestation by their moms or their grandmothers? Or does this have to do with their Christian upbringing? I mean, Jews and Muslims will tell you the same thing. Women are dirt. I'm talking about the fundamentalists. What is up with that? They even had to invent a creation myth where men gave birth to women. Oh, my God. Where men gave birth to women. I mean, they all share that Adam and Eve story, right? Adam gave birth. Oh, God. But this guy, Representative Pete DeGraff from Mulvane, Kansas, Republican, is insisting that women should plan and prepare for their own rape. For their own rape. This guy DeGraff is basically telling sexual assault victims that, quote, the state isn't AAA. So a Kansas woman is responsible for the consequences of her attacker. And by comparing it to life insurance, DeGraff also said, well, I have life insurance. I plan ahead. By comparing it to life insurance, he goes further to insinuate that rape is as inevitable as death. This was at Think Progress today, and as the writer Tanya Somanader points out, more and more Republican lawmakers are adopting the Sharon Angle, remember her from Nevada, attitude towards pregnancies resulting from rape. Remember what she said?
Well, if you're handed lemons, make lemonade.
Remember that? This year, one Indiana lawmaker even suggested that women would fake being raped so they could get an abortion. My God! And all of this is because the men who do this are either so brainwashed by this religious, superstitious horse crap, or they are so terrified of women. I think most of it is that. That's just like men who have to have guns for something other than, I don't see anything wrong with somebody having a gun in their house for protection, but I'm talking about the guy, it's kind of like having a condom for protection, you know, same thing. But these guys that I don't know, shoot guns for sport or join these goofball nutballs or run around the woods in their camos. You know, this is I've got a tiny penis kind of thing. These are penis extensions. That's all they are. Come on, boys. What the hell is wrong with you? You make me ashamed to be a male sometimes. What the hell is wrong with you? Why are you so terrified of a woman's right to privacy? What is that? Oh, that's what your preacher said, huh? Oh, my God. This hour, by the way, is sponsored by James Herlihy. Thank you, James. Thank you, sir. If you want to know really how filthy and degenerate and vile Republicans are, Eric Cantor, the number two man in the U.S. House, says Congress will not pay for the disasters in Missouri, Joplin, Missouri, where what's the death toll up to now? Congress won't pay for Missouri disaster relief unless a spending cut is produced somewhere else in the budget. Can you believe this rancid son of a bitch? Can you believe this guy, this Eric Cantor? Firefighters and rescue workers, it says here, who arrived in Joplin, found that the deadly tornado that hit that state Sunday had left what everyone agrees is a barren, smoky wasteland in its path. You've seen the pictures. Looks like Fukushima. It looks like, it's horrifying. Rescue workers worked through more storms in an effort to find potential survivors. The death toll, what is it, 123 now, 130? I don't know. It's just hundreds injured. Obama pledged full support, telling survivors, We're with you. We're going to stay with you. Not so fast, Mr. President. First of all, you got Netanyahu in addressing the U.S. Congress saying that your leadership doesn't matter to the Israelis. And apparently that was just music to these rat bastards' ears. They all rose up and applauded Netanyahu. So hold on, Mr. President, before you tell people who have come through a disaster that the U.S. government is with them, because House Minority or Majority Leader Eric Cantor said Monday that if Congress passes an emergency spending bill to help Missouri's tornado victims, the extra money will have to be cut from somewhere else. Uh-huh. In 2005, Republicans criticized then-House Majority Leader Tom DeLay for his willingness to fund relief in the wake of Hurricane Katrina by adding to the deficit. These people are sick. Plus, the Republicans have decided to cut the tornado forecasting service budget, including cuts to NOAA, weather satellite, that could cut in half the accuracy of these forecasts. It's just, these are Republicans for you. And according to the Huffington Post, a key House panel has approved a $1 billion aid package to make sure federal disaster relief accounts don't run out before the end of the budget year in September. The disaster aid package would be financed by a $1.5 billion cut from a loan program to encourage the production of fuel-efficient vehicles. You get that? See, this is a way the Republicans, they can say, well, we provided $1 billion for federal disaster relief on the one hand. On the other hand, they can say to these filthy corporate CEOs from the oil industry, hey, look here. Here's what we're going to do. We're cutting money from a loan program that encourages the production of fuel efficient vehicles. How's that, boys? Huh? Did we do good? Pat us on the ass. Pat us on the tops of our heads. As soon as we come back from listening to Benjamin Netanyahu say that any plan to bring peace, quote, quote, to the Middle East, the Republicans and the Democrats are going to pee all over. My God. So Eric Cantor was right when he said that he said it on Monday. No relief for you poor, miserable goyim out there in Kansas, nothing for you, unless we can cut money somewhere else. To hell with you. Well, he got it, didn't he? Oh, my God. And the so-called disaster relief fund is essentially going to run dry before the end of the year. That means sometime in mid to late summer, FEMA will have to freeze its recovery operations and can only fund what they call immediate need. That means recovery. That means dead bodies. Rebuilding and general assistance will stop. These are Republicans. This is what you sick sons of bitches wanted. This is what you got.
because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by the entire hour by James Herlihy. Thanks, James. Very kind of you. No message, just the sponsorship. CM writes regarding these anti-privacy laws targeted to women that have a net result of denying women, or, well, they're anti-privacy, but they're written as anti-abortion laws. CM writes, quick thought, no wealthy woman will have to follow anti-abortion law, only the poor. And if they go ahead and have a child and have to take welfare or food stamps, then Head Start will be cut. Programs will be cut to make it even harder for single moms to get ahead. It's a sad, sick world. Well, it's a sad, sick United States. I'd certainly agree with you on that one. As long as there are Republicans sucking in air. With 33% of the precincts in, the New York Democratic race, the 26th, the Democrat is ahead 48-42%. That's via Rachel Maddow. Bill sends this in. 48-42% with a third of the precincts in. Okay. Prairie 2 checks in. Not even a free breakfast, he writes. Oil was up today on projections issued by Goldman Sachs. Them again. That oil will hit $130 a barrel by this time next year. The other big banks chimed in with similar forecasts, making it a virtual fait accompli, since these banks own more oil than all the oil companies, at least on paper. Record supplies and a stagnant economy seem to not deter their optimism or pessimism, depending on whether you are the guppy or the shark in this particular pond. The CEO of Exxon testified before Congress recently that 40% of what you've been paying at the pump goes to Wall Street. You might assume that he was just shifting the blame to anyone but himself, and he didn't mention that oil companies are willing participants in the Wall Street shenanigans and profit from it greatly. Most oil costs less than $20 a barrel to produce. So you can see how it would serve everybody involved to keep the market price above $100 a barrel. In reality, most oil doesn't sell for anywhere near the market price, but this inflated number is required in order that the rich elites can take a large skim off the top of almost all economic activity. It's sort of like when the mob ran Las Vegas, but without the pretty showgirls to distract us. Those mob guys were amateurs compared to Wall Street. The occasional gambler might lose his house in Vegas, but the housing bubble took millions of houses, and the suckers didn't even know they were placing a bet. The government has been making money this week with sale of $7 billion worth of AIG stock at a modest profit. Chrysler also paid back $7.6 billion to the U.S. and Canada, bringing it in line to repay 100% of its emergency loan as it posts record profits. The misery of Toyota, of course, boosts U.S. manufacturers despite chronic part shortages from the destruction of critical manufacturing plants in Japan. By the way, Japan is moving to require all new construction to incorporate solar electricity production, and its prior plans to produce 50% of its electricity from nuclear are being scrapped. Germany, which has replaced the equivalent of 12 nuclear plants with solar over the past 10 years and had suspended their solar program because of a surplus of electricity, is likely now to shut down even more of its older nuclear plants. But the U.S. continues to have no real energy policy, along with no real trade policy and no real manufacturing policy. We're getting some new manufacturing jobs this year, but they pay a third of what the same jobs paid 3 years ago. Okay, we do have policies for trade, manufacturing, and energy, but they're set on Wall Street and only serve Wall Street. But then the U.S. House always makes the rules to make money for itself and not for us marks, and they don't even comp our breakfast. PrairieNumeral2.com is his website. Remember when the right-wingers just went absolutely, I thought they were going to have BMs in their drawers about giving money to the auto industry? Remember that? In an attempt to save thousands upon thousands of jobs? Remember? There was a Republican in America who didn't scream about socialism. And looks like all the money's being paid back. What do you hear coming from the right-wingers about that issue? Crickets. What do you hear coming from them? Attempt after attempt to put women in their place. To invade the most private part of a woman. To invade the idea that, they really are. They're like Stalinists. They are like the Soviet secret police. To invade every single area of privacy. As long as men's privacy. Oh no! Hey, listen! No! We want to get a vasectomy. We'll just go get a goddamn vasectomy. You know, nobody's business. Yes, but think of all the little sperms you're denying a right to live. All the little sperms are going to back up in your prostate and just kind of sit there and go. Okay, not in the prostate. You know what I'm saying? What about those little sperms? Oh, God. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Official, the Democrat Kathy Hochul has won in the New York. Is it the 26th district in upstate New York? Yeah, the 26th congressional district. That's the first time that's happened in 155 years. Really? Well, gee, Paul Ryan, you just keep pushing it. Go ahead. Keep pushing it. Keep pushing it, you Republicans. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. The teabagger, he sucked off some of the votes, but it really doesn't matter at this point, does it? Keep pushing your brand of insanity, you Republican devils. Go ahead. Maybe the American people will finally wake up to this. This hour is sponsored by Bo Rinaldi. He's got a message here. Become a bloodless revolutionary. Free yourself from the matrix. Go to this website, cookinghealthylessons.com. That website reveals all, Bo says. Learn from a master how to attain freedom from the man. cookinghealthylessons.com. Have you checked this out? Have you gone to this website, Kathy? You haven't? I'm going to have to check it out. cookinghealthylessons.com reveals all. Learn from a master how to attain freedom from the man. Thanks, Bo. Got an email from Gordon in Oklahoma City, where these tornadoes now have killed four. Gordon writes, what a day it's been. The tornado, which tracked a few miles from where I live, could have been nearly a mile wide at times. And the best guess is that it was an EF4 and possibly another rare EF5. Homes have been reduced to sticks, with only concrete slabs remaining, cars and trucks twisted like crumbled aluminum foil, bodies of dead livestock dotting the once serene pastures. Sadly, rescue teams are searching for a missing three-year-old child. As you read this, the child, mother, and siblings were in a bathtub in the middle of the house, which was totally destroyed. Anyone who lives in areas known for tornadoes must always have a plan and a storm shelter. Unfortunately, the National Weather Service is facing severe cutbacks thanks to the right-wingers sent to Congress and the dumbasses in Tornado Alley who keep electing them. Damn you people. Gordon, who signs himself a liberal gay atheist who continues to survive in Oklahoma. All right, Gordon, thank you. You know, when the national when the weather commentators talk about, you know, get to the basement, so many of these homes don't have basements, and unlike Aunt M and Uncle, who is Dorothy's uncle, Aunt M, and they don't have a fruit cellar, a storm cellar. Hochul wins. That's great. I mean, anything to stop these filthy Republicans. I just hope that at some point Americans wake up and stop the filthy Democrats, too, and elect some people who are not owned outright by either the Israeli lobby or the energy lobby or the tobacco lobby or the banking lobby or the Wall Street lobby. You know, elect some people who represent their districts, who represent citizens, and who tell the truth. From the Huffington Post, more Eric Cantor. Republicans have been wasting no time in trying to capitalize on this contrived dispute that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu picked with President Obama over the uncontroversial statement that a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict must be based on the 1967 lines of demarcation. The statement is uncontroversial because it is the whole basis for the peace process since its inception in the early 1990s. This is not new. Obama is probably the only president just come out and said it publicly. This is not new. It's the long-standing basis for U.S. efforts to resolve the conflict. And it's mandated by international law, but forget that. Just 22% of the land that Israel required after 1967 is considered illegally occupied, and Israel's required to withdraw from it. But they won't. But of course, now you get your you have Republicans in Congress and Republican presidential scum claiming that Obama has thrown Israel under the bus. An effort to shake Obama's support in the pro-Israel community in the lead-up to the 2012 election. But Eric Cantor decided to go a step further, and what a step it was. According to Huffington Post, his remarks to the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC's conference on Sunday, he said, quote, sadly, referring to Arab culture and the hatred it allegedly entails. When did Arabs start hating us? I'm not talking about the ancient conflicts between these crazy religions, Christianity and Islam. I'm talking about, you know, the Arab-American conflict. When did that start? And by the way, did you know that there are more Arab speakers in this country, the United States, than there are Jews? Oh, but never mind. Anyway, this is what he said. Sadly, the Arab culture is a culture infused with resentment and hatred. It is this culture that underlies the Palestinians and the broader Arab world's refusal to accept Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. And this is the root of the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. It is not about the 67 lines. Oh, my God. Of course not, Eric. It's because the Arabs are very jealous. The Palestinians are jealous of the Jews in Israel. They're very jealous. The slaughter of Palestinians, to the contrary, notwithstanding, it is jealousy. Right, Eric? Whether Cantor believes these disgraceful comments or whether he was just engaging in shameless pandering is not really clear. But this is what Eric Cantor does. Remember, he is waiting for John Boehner to have that fatal or near fatal traffic accident when he's drunk so that Eric Cantor can go to the emergency room and stand on the oxygen tube until Boehner goes, Eric, get off the tube. And then Eric can move into the number one slot as the speaker. Well, he thinks he can anyway. Cantor is apparently disturbed by how a culture could produce Palestinian suicide bombers. But either side could come up with a wide list of extreme examples of wrongheadedly, examples to wrongheadedly argue against the other side's humanity. Would Cantor find it worthy of a rhetorical question to ask what kind of culture could drive half of Israel's high school students to be in favor of denying Arabs equal rights? Or how a terrorist who murdered dozens of worshippers in a mosque could be celebrated? Or how death to Arabs could become a common chant during soccer games in Israel? I'm telling you, take it from Uncle Mike. That's never going to be resolved. The Israeli-Palestinian issue, it will never be resolved. And let's stop referring to Israel as this poor little country surrounded by enemies. It is a nuclear power. It is a massive nuclear power.
Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Bo Rinaldi is our sponsor this hour. He has a message. Become a bloodless revolutionary. Free yourself from the matrix. CookingHealthyLessons.com reveals all. CookingHealthyLessons.com reveals all. Learn from a master how to attain freedom from the man. Okay. Warisacrime.org. Have you been to that website? Warisacrime.org. They have a piece here from David Swanson about this bill that's before Congress right now. Have you heard about this? The Defense Authorization Bill. Arguably, it's the worst bill ever considered, likely to pass into law. It includes $118 billion for the murder that is going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. Wars the majority of Americans, of course, want ended, but that doesn't matter. The defense industry, like so many other lobbying groups, they know where to grab the members of Congress, Democrat and Republican alike. You grab them by the short hairs and you just say to them, you want to be reelected, Sparky? Then make goddamn sure that we continue to be rich. And the we, you, the all kinds of interchangeable labels you can put in there. We, the defense industry. We, the oil industry. We, the American supporters of Israel. We, the banking industry. We, the insurance industry. We, the real estate industry. Just on and on. We, the nuclear industry. Just on and on, on and on. The members of Congress, with few exceptions, do not represent the people from the districts that they're from which they're elected. Or the states, if you consider senators. They are there because special interests paid for them to be there. And I hate the term special interests. Capitalist America paid for them to be there. $118 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but that's not why this is the worst bill ever. The bill also includes $553 billion. That's half $1 trillion for other military waste. That's enough money to save and improve a lot of lives if it weren't being dumped into the war machine. But that's not why this is the worst bill ever. The bill limits the president's ability to implement the new START agreement. The strategic arms agreement with the Russians that is designed to reduce the number of deliverable nuclear weapons between the United States and Russia. It limits the president's ability to implement the New START agreement unless there is full funding for the nuclear weapons complex. In other words, if you want to reduce the old weapons inventory, you've got to provide money to make new ones. Son of a bitch! Wait, did you get that? But that's not why this is the worst bill ever. The bill invests heavily in a national missile defense system based in California and Alaska. The bill revises the second engine for the F-35 that the Pentagon has already said over and over they have no use for. The bill bars any transfers of prisoners from Guantanamo to the United States for trial. But none of that is why this is the worst bill ever. Why is it? This is the worst bill ever because it gives presidents the power to single-handedly launch wars and to lock people up without trial. You think you still live in a democratic republic, Sparky? You think you still live in a country that is governed by the rule of law? The legislation undoes the limitations on one-man rule put in place by the U.S. Constitution 200 years ago. This is the biggest formal shift of power in our government since we've had a government. We have military operations now in some 75 countries, and war in Libya, all illegal under the U.S. Constitution and the War Powers Act. But the worst bill ever will erase the War Powers Act, and the Constitution simply will be ignored. And meanwhile, the significant withdrawal of U.S. troops that Obama promised to begin in Afghanistan has been scaled back to a withdrawal of 2.5% of U.S. forces. The worst bill ever to be before Congress. It gives presidents the power to single-handedly launch wars and to lock people up without trial. In other words, it codifies the war crimes committed by George W. Bush and makes them legal here. This is what we've come to in this country because of the filth of Republicans and the culpability of Democrats. And because these people don't work for you and me, these office holders, they have nothing to do with you and me except to come back to the home districts or the home states during campaigns and talk about all the good things they're going to do. And that's a lie.
I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Bo Rinaldi. Become a bloodless revolutionary, he writes. Free yourself from the matrix. CookingHealthyLessons.com reveals all. Learn from a master how to attain freedom from the man. The Democratic winner in New York's 26th, Hochul, has just given her victory speech, let me see if I can, I don't want to turn on MSNBC right now because there's somebody on there that kind of turns my stomach. And CNN is covering the tornado. Okay, never mind. We were going to play some of it for you, but, I'll be interested to see how the Republican filth spins this tomorrow morning, huh? Mary in Washington writes regarding these laws that are being passed that violates a woman's right to privacy all around the country. Mary in D.C. writes, Mike, here's the rich white Republican male utopia for rape and incest victims and women in general. Based on the legislation they've embraced and voted for, no birth control or any family planning of any kind, no insurance that includes abortion coverage, even if it's paid for using private money, gagging doctors from mentioning abortion, and government funding for Viagra. This is in America. Mary in D.C. And from Matt in St. Louis, Mike, Brit Hume on Greta Van Susteren's program just declared Netanyahu the winner of the last few days. What do you suppose that means? He also reported that Netanyahu received 29 standing ovations in front of Congress today. What traitors? Brit Hume said, quote, clearly it wasn't Netanyahu that was backpedaling after the weekend. It was Obama, end quote. Yeah, well, the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization, I don't know if Brit Hume, who was bounced off of CNN, or off of NBC, he used to be the NBC White House correspondent until they got rid of him, but I don't know if he's still on Fox Terror Network. I just don't watch that garbage ever, you know, ever. But, for someone who claims to be a journalist, an American journalist, to declare that a foreign head of state won in some sort of contest in this rat bastard's head against the United States, or the president of the United States, if that's not treason, what is? You know, I mean, conversational treason. I don't mean, okay, let's not call it treason. Let's call it disloyalty. Let's call it fifth column activity on the part of the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization and all its little monsters that run around in the United States trying to end this country. I wonder if Brit Hume understands that unqualified U.S. support for a series of Israeli governments going back half a century has been the direct and indirect cause of and result of the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people in the Middle East, including thousands upon thousands of Americans. I wonder if this pig, Brit Hume, this illiterate, functionally illiterate moron that works or used to work for the Murdoch terror organization, I wonder if he understands that, the unqualified support for the Israeli governments, whatever they have, whoever has led them, and unqualified denial of the rights of the other people living in that little piece of land has resulted in the kind of foreign policy disasters that the United States has been involved in over and over and over and over again. Let's not forget what bin Laden claimed his motivation was in organizing against the United States. It was a fact of U.S. military presence in what this religious nut considered to be holy ground. Troops in Saudi Arabia, A, B, what I just said, the one-sided, unqualified support for people that the Arab speakers in that part of the world see as invaders. Brit Hume, to Brit Hume, it's just a big goddamn joke, isn't it, right? Hey, Benjamin Netanyahu won! Ha, 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 ha! Kicked Obama's ass, didn't he? 29 standing ovations in the U.S. Congress. How's that? Is that good enough? Ha, 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 ha! You suppose Brit Hume would ever consider offering any ideas for a solution to that? Some way to get to a two-state solution? Some way to have the Israelis declare, as every other nuclear power has to, the state of their nuclear arsenal? When's the last time the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, took a tour of Israeli nuclear facilities? When was the last time? Last year, 5 years ago, 10 years, 15 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, ever? Never. Oh, well. Brit Hume and the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization, broadcast organization, makes absolutely no claim whatsoever to being supportive of the United States. The Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast network is only interested in one thing, destabilizing the American culture, overthrowing the last shreds of representative government that may still exist somewhere in a few districts still left where the representatives from those districts actually go to Congress to work in favor of their constituents and not in favor of the blank, fill in the blank, lobby. And the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization and its subsidiaries, including the pig, Rush Limbaugh, have done a good job in destroying this culture, this society, undermining it, ripping it to pieces, destroying people's confidence in government. When was government? I mean, government can do evil things, but when was government self-governance declared to be bad? The government that's in place now is horrible, but it's a It's an almost fascist organization, or as Mussolini would call it, corporatist organization. But the idea of representative government, isn't that why we send American soldiers to go die and have their arms and legs blown off and have their brains blown away? Is to bring democracy to tribal countries that are about as interested in democracy as you're interested in brain cancer? The Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization and its subsidiaries have done a good job in their minds in destroying even the idea that government can do good things. government can't unless it's truly representative of the people. And then the people, the citizen legislators, not the career cockroaches that get elected once and then expect to be reelected over and over again because of all the money they have, because of Citizens United, because of funding that goes into the hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, that doesn't come from the constituents back in the suburbs or the inner city or the exurbs. That's not where that money comes from. So the Rupert Murdoch Broadcast Terror Organization and its foot soldiers and subsidiaries and sponsors and helpmeets, they've done a good job in undermining the concept of representative government, of self-governance. I'm not talking about the stinking mess that we have now, where even the idea of a bill working its way onto the floor of Congress that would authorize presidents of the United States to initiate hostile action with no check and balance against anyone that president cared to. I mean... And to lock people up with no trial, nothing. Of course, Obama has already made it clear that he has no problem ordering the extrajudicial murder of American citizens if that person is deemed to be a terror threat. Oh, Jesus, never mind. We'll be right back.
Right inside the night, I'm waiting for the light. Seems like I'm in the middle. Yeah. Working for something that I can't touch and sometimes can't even believe in. Sometimes wraps around too tight, so tight.
To Bo Rinaldi, who sponsored this hour of the Malloy program tonight. His message, become a bloodless revolutionary, free yourself from the matrix. CookingHealthyLessons.com reveals all. Learn from a master how to attain freedom from the man. All right, well, check it out. Check it out and tell me what you find. CookingHealthyLessons.com. Bo Rinaldi, our sponsor this hour. Thanks, Bo. From George in Oregon. The piece of garbage making its way through Congress sounds like the Enabling Act that was passed in Germany in 1933. We are truly a nation of sheep. We're treated like sheep because we act like sheep. From the Encyclopedia Britannica, Enabling Act, law passed by the German Reichstag in 1933 that enabled Adolf Hitler to assume dictatorial powers. Deputies from the Nazi Party, the German National People's Party, and the Center Party voted in favor of the act, which enabled Hitler's government to issue decrees independently of the Reichstag and the presidency. It gave Hitler a base from which to carry out the first steps of his National Socialist Revolution. My God. From alternet.org, hunger and starvation is no excuse to welch off the federal government. That's the Republican response to how to deal with a budget deficit. While Republicans defend billions of dollars in subsidies for big oil and propose further tax cuts for the wealthy. They see food aid for hungry people here and around the world as a bad idea. Big government should get out of the business of keeping people from starving. Dateline Washington. House Republicans are targeting domestic nutrition programs and international food assistance as they try to control spending in next year's budget. In a bill released Monday, Republicans proposed cutting $832 million from this year's budget for women, infants, and children feeding programs, which provides food for low-income mothers and children. The budget proposal for food and farm programs also includes a decrease of almost $500 million from international food assistance. The legislation would cut $2 billion from food stamps. Of course, Republicans claim this is all wasted money and that cutting it would have no effect on the actual delivery of services for poor, underfed, malnourished people. Please excuse me if I don't trust the word of the same folks who apologized to the chairman of BP for the way the Obama administration acted to obtain compensation for all the billions of dollars of damage that was caused by BP's negligence. Or the same folks who believe global warming and climate change are a hoax conceived by Al Gore and scientists who are conspiring to kill our economy. Or the same folks who scream to high heaven about Obamacare death panels. Or the same folks who claim that killing Medicare is really the way to save it. Or the same folks who told us the Bush tax cuts would create jobs and increase government revenues. How's all that working out for you, huh? What can I say, Stephen Bowman? Or Stephen D. of the Bowman Tribune. This is posted alternate. He says, What can I say? I'm a bit paranoid when Republicans claim that cutting essential services like funds for the National Weather Service and FEMA wouldn't put people at risk. Here's what some non-Republicans have to say about these proposed cuts. Hunger advocates have warned against stripping these programs of these reserves. Two analysts from the Liberal Research and Advocacy Group Center on Budget and Policy Priorities said Monday that the cuts could mean turning away as many as 475,000 people from the Women, Infants, and Children program if food prices continue to rise. Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, said the Republican budget rolls back years of progress. She said, quote, this budget threatens the health and security of American families while asking the most of low-income seniors and the most vulnerable among us, end quote. Here's the Republican agenda in a nutshell. Anything government does that helps people and saves lives should be eliminated. That is, public schools, Social Security, Medicare, disaster relief, and so on. It all needs to be eradicated. The ashes tossed into the sea. But anything that helps private business, major corporations or capitalisms and rich people, helps them rip off the American taxpayer. Oh! Like fraud and abuse in government contracts, wasteful defense spending, tax cuts for the top 1% of Americans, so on and so on. All that should be promoted and increased until the middle class has a waist size roughly equivalent to that of a person in end-stage anorexia. So, cutting funds for food and hungry people? Cutting funds for food for hungry people? Yeah. That's so Republican. But I tell you what, you right wingers who secretly listen to this program, we know what you do. We know. You keep voting Republican, okay? You just keep doing it. Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, maybe we'll take some phone calls. Maybe. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. It's the Malloy program. And once again, the 26th district in New York, owned by the Republican Party for 150 years, is now the property of the Democratic Party as a result of a special election held tonight, or held today. The Democratic candidate, Hochul, defeated the Republican candidate. And I don't know a whole lot about either one of them, except the Republican had signed on to Paul Ryan's decision to murder Medicare. Oh, no. Blue's on the phone? Oh, Jesus, you're kidding me. As soon as I open up the lines, he's there. Oh, God. Blue's here. You don't know who Blue is? Oh, Jesus. Well, what am I going to do? Oh, my God, Kathy's putting him on hold. Well, if we get some more calls in here real quick, I'll make him just sit there. What's he want to talk about? Obama is war criminal. Well, we know that. 877-996-2556 is the number here. Hurry. This headline was not very uplifting to me. The headline is Pentagon expects more IED attacks as U.S. casualties rise. Talking about Afghanistan. It says nearly a decade of costly and sometimes frantic struggle, the United States military has been unable to control the Afghan insurgents' most deadly weapon, the improvised explosive device, or IED. As the war's 10th year opens, casualties are again on the rise, and senior U.S. officials expect the war's grim toll will claim even more dead and wounded. Now, they're only talking about Americans here. In his first interview since taking over the Pentagon's counter-IED campaign in March, Army Lieutenant General Michael Barbaro told the Huffington Post he expects increased U.S., allied, and Afghan casualties in the coming months as the fighting picks up and dismounted American troops push into areas in southern and eastern Afghanistan against fierce Taliban resistance. General Barbaro, a West Point officer with vast combat experience, said, "We're going to have good days and we're going to have bad days." He agreed that the casualty statistics are horrifying. But he insists that the growing list of casualties is not a sign that the insurgents are winning. No, of course not. So far this year, 80 Americans have been killed by IEDs. Since the war began 10 years ago, 980 U.S. troops have been killed by roadside bombs. Thousands more have been severely wounded. The U.S. military has spent more than $20 billion trying to prevent the damage. These primitive but deadly homemade bombs, most of the explosives are made of ammonium nitrate, a common ingredient in fertilizer. Yeah, folks in Oklahoma City know about that. That is made in, quote, a couple of factories in Pakistan, General Barbaro said. The compound is packaged in bags and carried by donkey cart or truck into Afghanistan. It's everywhere, the general said. It's everywhere. So, if bin Laden is dead, and we know that our biggest enemy in Afghanistan is the person we have in charge, Hamid Karzai, and that our real enemy in that part of the world is Pakistan. Only, I say enemy only in the sense that they hate us. We've given them since the beginning of this war, this invasion, it's not a war, this invasion and occupation, What did I read the other day? We have given the Pakistani government $15 billion that has been used to develop their military and their nuclear weapons program. And, of course, they provided safe haven, if you believe the official story, to Osama bin Laden for probably most of those 10 years. But U.S. policy, you see, just like where it concerns Israel or our occupation of Iraq or our invasion and occupation of Afghanistan, the fact that we have troops in 75 foreign countries, the policies are just, I don't know, they just, for some reason, well, we know what the reason is. It's not some reason. It's because this is the way corporate America wants it. We can't disengage, ever. And now this piece of legislation that is equivalent to Hitler's Enabling Act is working its way through Congress that would give a president of the United States the legal power, at least here, to invade any country that that president wants to and to lock people up without charge. And what are Americans going to do about this? David Swanson at afterdowningstreet.org, which is now, what's the website? Warisacrime.org, is suggesting that you call your representative and your two senators and tell them this can't be passed. But I don't think very many Americans are going to take the time to do that at all. All right, let's do some phone calls. Jim is in Las Vegas listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jim.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I think you're doing a great show, as usual. I'm going to talk about the tornadoes in the Bible Belt.
Sure.
Where's Pat Robinson and Franklin Graham? Freak.
Yeah,
need them.
Yeah, that's what I asked this morning or earlier in the program tonight. Well, I wish they would step out and explain to us why God has decided to murder hundreds of people in the heartland of the Bible Belt.
Yeah, you know, I'm originally from New Orleans, and I'm in Vegas now. Thank goodness for small favors, but you know, I that's what one of the reasons I left there. Just the right, it's so hard right wing down there. I haven't been there in, I don't know, 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, they get into that fundamentalist Christianity. Me myself, I'm a born again atheist. And, it's just, it's mind boggling. You know? So maybe we could do an atheistic chant or something. What do you think?
I don't know. It might work. I'm not sure.
You know, and then like you try, and then it's like at work, I had two women. They actually prayed over me to try and save me.
Yeah.
And that just reconfirm my atheism.
Yeah.
And that was a couple of years ago. And, that and then, all right, let me jump to this real quick. The military industrial complex, which has been going on since Ike Eisenhower.
Right.
When I was born, he warned about that.
He did indeed.
And it got JFK killed. Which led to RFK and MLK, and it's just one thing after another, and they just keep on pulling these shenanigans, and the American people just keep on falling for it. I try to be optimistic. I was optimistic when Obama got elected, cautiously.
Yeah, that didn't work out very well, did it? Hey, Jim, I got to leave it there, pal. We're flat out of time. Thanks for checking in, and I hope you call again. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
in Northwoods, working as a cook for a spell. But I never did like it all that much, and one day the axe just fell. So I drifted down
21 past the hour. Got an email here from Ron in Raleigh. Actually, he wrote it to Bob Kincaid at the Head On Radio Network that follows on online immediately after after this program. I think Bob still does it that way. White Rose Society streams it. But he sent me a copy, Ron in Raleigh, so I'll share it with you. Hey, Bob, I don't know how you feel about the love fest going on with Bibi Netanyahu, but I've just about had it. The President of the United States makes a speech concerning the Israeli-Palestinian situation and gets raked over the coals for saying the same thing every president has said since the 1967 war. Netanyahu says in his speech to Congress that Israel cannot return to the indefensible 1967 borders. Seems to me since 1967, they have done an outstanding job of defending those borders. The final nail in the coffin for me, vis-a-vis President Not Sure, was when he sat with the murderous thug Netanyahu and said after the IDF attacked a ship in international waters and murdered a U.S. citizen that Israel had shown, quote, remarkable restraint, end quote, in their conduct. The embarrassing spectacle of both parties in Congress springing to their feet to give Netanyahu standing ovation after standing ovation makes me sick. There will never be peace in the Middle East as long as everyone in the region is evil and not to be trusted, and our so-called ally in the region is the only entity that has the right of self-defense, to possess nukes, to have their own infrastructure free. Israel in particular, the right-wing parties, are the bullies in the process, and as long as we back their every move, there can't be peace. Israel's idea of negotiation is, give us everything we want and we'll decide if it's enough. The Kabuki Theater of America, being the Middle East peace broker, is wearing extremely thin. We need to stand down from this non-starting process, stop funding the Israeli war machine, and work with those governments in the region that we could have relations with on a long-term basis. I know it's wishful thinking, but I've been watching this crap over the entirety of my 60 years, and things just get worse. The Israelis are the victims, and we are the facilitators of their victimhood, and I wish it would stop. Ron in Raleigh. Where are we? Oh, there we are. Sanchez is in East L.A. Hello, Sanchez.
Well, if I could pick up immediately where you were just discussing right now, I'd, you know, that is like the Hatfields versus the McCoys, and it ain't never going to get settled.
No, it's not, but, you know, I maintain that it could be if the United States, even going forward, not looking at the debacle we've made of that whole situation by backing one side completely and the other side just kicking to the curb, if the United States would first of all free itself from AIPAC, the members of Congress would disentangle itself from the Israeli lobby. Of course, that's impossible. But if that were to happen, and then we had a president of the United States who understood that the foreign policy disasters that we keep getting into that results in the deaths of thousands of our people and hundreds of thousands of other people, that those foreign policy disasters could be avoided altogether.
Right.
If our foreign policy in the Middle East were more balanced, if we had a president who would adopt that attitude, and we had a Congress that was not owned where it concerns the Middle East by AIPAC, it's owned by so many entities, it's hard to keep track, then it could be solved, because then the United States leadership would sit down with the Israeli leadership and say, all right, here are the facts. Here's what is going to happen. And if it does not happen, we're gone. You're on your own. And I just don't think there is an American Congress or an American president who would say that, because the House, the Senate, the Democrats, Republicans, and certainly the executive branch are absolute. Either they are venal toadies to corporate America, or they're cowards.
Yeah.
In some instances, both.
Yeah. Sanchez,
let me put you on hold.
Go ahead.
I did all the talking. I'll put you on hold. I got to do a break here, and we'll come back after the break and pick up wherever you want to pick it up. All right?
Okay.
All right. Hold on. I get just like the letter writer wrote the letter to Bob Kincaid at the Head On Radio Network. I too have spent my whole not my whole life, but at least ever since the '67 war, following the situation in the Middle East. And not really understanding the Palestinian side of that horror until the 80s, until the first Intifada. And then started reading, independent of American media, independent of the Israeli lobby, independent of the Arab lobby. Just reading books on the Middle East and trying to figure out where I stood on the issue. And now I know. There's peace on earth. Peace on earth. Peace on earth. Peace on
is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
She makes the sign of a teaspoon, he makes the sign of a wave. The poor boy changes clothes and puts on aftershave to compensate for his ordinary shoes.
25 before the hour. We're talking with Sanchez in East L.A. All right, where were we?
Sí, gracias, señor. I was just, the point that I wanted to make to this Hatfield-McCoy feud was just the fact, all of the points that you made, señor, were valid points, but to put on top of that, which is the reason why it will never be rectified, is just the fact that the United States has zero credibility when it comes to this particular situation, because of the fact that we have favored all of these dictators, kings, and all of these crooked regimes that have been in place since, I think, they were all put in place by the CIA in the 1950s, and they all became these brutal dictatorships that always put their people down. So in one case, here we are kicking and screaming for the Israelis and their protection, but yet, for decades, we haven't given a damn about the Arab people themselves.
Right.
And, you know, we got to admit here, Mike, both of us, we've been rather inspired by the events that have been happening with the Arab Spring. So the only thing I want to say about that why is it right that, you know, here we are, we're still bombing Libya and spending umpteen billions doing that, but yet Bahrain, we don't want the people free there, neither in Yemen, and what's the story in Syria? So, again, this is all hopscotch diplomacy, which leads me to believe that we don't have an ounce of credibility here. But seriously, because I know, dude, you have Blue on the line here, so I want to rectify the rest. I mean, give most of my time away to him, so you can get to whatever it is that he wants to talk about here, since I'm not articulate enough to express it. But the thing really seriously that I did want to tell you about, in case you didn't hear about that, was there was an AP article this morning about Harold Camping. I know that you were opening the program talking about that family radio minister, right?
Right, right.
Did you hear all the details about that?
I'm not sure.
Well, he was at his family radio headquarters in Oakland this morning, and you know that's where he's been in hiding all weekend long, from hiding himself away from his angry followers and the media. And so finally this morning he popped his head out of his radio headquarters there in Oakland. And well, when he was walking out, he was holding his head down in shame, obviously in embarrassment. So, but then when he looked down, Harold Camping saw his shadow, so he immediately looked up and said, "There will be six more weeks till rapture."
Okay, well, Sanchez, I have a different story, and this is legit. According to preacher Harold Camping, on Saturday the rapture did occur. During the rapture, all good Christians ascended to heaven to be with God, while the wicked were damned to remain on earth to experience the end of the world in October. Camping said, quote, "This is absolute proof that I'm correct. The rapture definitely took place, but there just wasn't a soul worth saving, so it went unnoticed. The world will still end in October as planned." When asked why he, as a good Christian, hadn't ascended at 6 p.m. California time, Mr. Camping offered little explanation, simply saying, quote, "Why I am still here is irrelevant. All I can do now is take the $80 million surplus my organization has collected from religious donors to the Cayman Islands, where I intend to work tirelessly spreading the word of God before the end of days in October."
Yes.
Now, I get that from a very reliable source named Dave.
Yeah, so, it sounded like it. It sounded like it.
So
it's our new date to look forward to, by the way, is October 21st. That's what he's saying.
No, not this time.
I know.
I spent too much time, you know, jiggling around with that nonsense on the last go around. So I'm more interested in this couple in Australia who claim to be Jesus and Mary Magdalene. You've heard about them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have this enormous following. They have 30 people. And they're living in Western Australia, I guess, on where they bought a square mile of land, and they're hanging out with the kangaroos and the wallabies or whatever, and you know, having a great old time. I get so sick of these religious freaks. I don't care what religion it is, Sanchez.
I do. Right, I do man. Too. Okay, one last thing.
Sure.
I have a suggestion here, and it's an exciting one.
Yeah.
You know, you have your podcast trivia game, but I would like to add this as the next exciting truth seeker game. Where in the world is Blue calling from? And each truth seeker calls in and guesses. Kathy takes their number, puts it down on the little square here. So I would like to put $25 down on Tierra del Fuego.
Tierra del Fuego.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll be anxiously hear where Blue's calling from tonight.
All right, Sanchez.
Have a good one, man.
All right, you too. Well, I don't know if we'll get to Blue. I've got a couple of people in for. Well, let me. Wait, hold on. All right, I think I can squeeze Blue in. Hello, Blue.
Hey, good day, Mike. If Sanchez is still listening, I just want to say, I want to clear this up. Sanchez, you're the most articulate bloke I've heard in the last 10 minutes, all right? Now, before I get to the thing I wanted to talk about.
Okay, now let me just tell you, you got 4 minutes. Which is a lifetime in radio. Go ahead, Blue.
You know, this stupid drongo in New Mexico who asked the TSA to come to the prom.
Right.
It's like inviting the Gestapo to your bar mitzvah. You know?
Sure.
But as far as Netanyahu is concerned, if we had an American president with any intestinal fortitude and certain parts of his anatomy still intact, he'd sit him down and say, "Now listen, you arrogant bastard. Number one, we're going to stop the $10 billion of military assistance, so-called, that we give you each year."
Actually, it's about three, but that's all right. Who's counting? But go ahead.
Well, that's what we know about, and there's speculative as to what the rest of it is. But then you're going to permit the Palestinians the state that they were mandated 65 years ago. And when we see that that's actually happened, we'll renegotiate our relationship with you. How's that, BB?
That sounds good to me.
Now,
all right, now wait, Blue, wait a second. Are you calling from Tierra del Fuego?
No, I'm just a bit to the left of that at the moment.
To the left? You're in the ocean?
Well, a bit further to the left.
A bit further to the left? All right.
Yeah, we're in Decker. We're in Dhaka this morning, in Bangladesh.
Bangladesh? Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go, Sanchez. You lose. All right, go ahead, Blue. I just...
Sanchez owes me a beer.
He had $25 down on Tierra del Fuego. That's all. Go ahead.
Well, I'll take it, and we'll settle with that way.
Okay.
The other thing was I wanted to congratulate you because I heard you yesterday morning finally unequivocally equating Obama with Bush because he's just as big a war criminal as Bush is, and if Bush is going to be in the dock with Cheney and the rest, then Obama should be there too. And that's the theme of so many of the English language publications that I've been reading as we've made a sweep through this part of the world in India, and we didn't go into Pakistan, but Pakistan and Bangladesh also have a significant number of English publications.
Uh-huh.
And there's an enormous amount of hatred and resentment, and justly so, about what the United States is doing. Now, they did not kill bin Laden a couple of weeks ago. We know that. Most of the rest of the world knows it anyway. But they've certainly been invading Pakistan and killing Pakistani people. And certainly something took place a couple of weeks ago. Probably some poor bastard was shot as part of the sound and light show to substantiate this ridiculous story about killing bin Laden. But there's just an enormous amount of deep-seated and very profound rage in the rest of the world. And it's just astonishing to me that we see so little about this in your media. I mean, you keep telling me, well, why are you surprised? Well, I'm still saying it. I'm still surprised.
Well, I guess not living here, you would be surprised. But that's one of the reasons I think that any talk show host, whether it's on radio or television, or any editorial writer, would check various news outlets around the world, the European press, the Middle Eastern press, the South Asian press.
Yeah, they obviously don't.
Well, obviously they do not, but that's one of the reasons I check out India Times or check out newspapers from Pakistan, from that part of the world, even sometimes the Sydney Daily Herald, believe it or not, and other publications to get a sense of how the United States is seen by the rest of the world. And it's in Blue. I'm going to have to bail out on you here in just about 10 seconds. It's not a pretty picture. The average American does not have a clue as to how the rest of the world sees us and doesn't want to know, because of this jingoistic exceptionalism that this country has been spoon-fed since most of us were in kindergarten. We were always told that, oh, you know, you're special. But it can't go on too much longer. It just simply can't. Blue, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Next time, call from Tierra del Fuego. Take care.
Burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail, hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel and death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the
That
storm.
Happens to be one of my favorite Dylan songs. Today is his 70th birthday. Matt is in Santa Fe. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I want to thank you for the opportunity. A friend of mine suggested about 6 months ago that I start listening to your show, and frankly, it helps keep me sane most of the time. So.
Well, really, that's. I guess that's a nice thing to say.
No, it is a good thing.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you found the program. Thank you.
First off, I grew up in Missouri, and
anywhere near Joplin?
Not exactly. A little east of there. But I do remember having to growing up gay also,
mm-hmm.
and having to deal with individuals that you've discussed. And frankly, I have to completely agree with the statement you made a couple days ago. I can't use the B word, can I?
Depends on which B word.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, karma is a slang.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, you can say karma's a bitch, sure.
Okay, yeah, karma's a bitch, so, yeah, okay.
The only words we can't use are the seven that George Carlin used to talk about, and even that, I think the FCC wouldn't do anything, but we have affiliates, radio stations, whose managers get, you know, rightly so, a little bit concerned if certain language is used, because it just means that they're going to get a flood of phone calls from people say, "Get him off the air!" You know, so we try not to give more ammunition than they already have.
Understood.
Right.
I also was a retired military veteran, and I served everywhere from the Persian Gulf War minus Somalia.
Mm.
And, you know, people come up to me and say, "Thank you for your service." And, you know, you get to a point that either, one, you have to justify the lies, or you start questioning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And... you know, you get to a point where, well, you know, I started to question. And, well, you know, that's usually a mistake for somebody in the military, but I didn't give a damn. There's so many lies. And, see, that's why I like your show, is that you ask people to question. And, unfortunately, I think for a lot of people in our country, that's just, it's come to a point where it's too difficult for them to do that. That's a lack of, and it takes courage, and unfortunately I think a lot of people lack that.
I've never asked this question. As a gay man who is a, I assume, with the theaters that you mentioned, you were in combat areas,
yes.
As a gay combat veteran, how were you able to, and I don't mean to put the gay first, I should say as a combat veteran who happened to be gay, were you able to do military service knowing that the military in which you served, if they knew you were gay, would have kicked you to the curb? How did you do that? I mean, obviously you must have been putting your life on the line.
Absolutely. You know, I wish I could give you a concise answer to that, because there isn't one. I think when you join up when you're, regardless of your sexual orientation, when you join up when you're a 19, 20, 21, 22, what have you,
mm-hmm.
you're people join up for various reasons, and usually they're the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think at that point in my life, it was the old, well, I'm going to prove that I'm just as good as anybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get to a point where you start to realize that, and especially with rank and position and security clearances, that it's all BS.
Mm-hmm.
And you come to a point, well, either you're going to question it, and you're going to question individuals in positions of authority,
mm-hmm.
or... you're just gonna, well, frankly, lose it and end up, in a ward somewhere in a VA hospital.
Right.
So I guess that's the best answer I can give you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. I understand because I used to be 19 too, and how attitudes at that age that I'm going to prove myself seems to override everything, no matter
mm-hmm.
what it is that a person's trying to prove. Well, Matt, I'm glad you called. I do respect you, and I certainly hope you'll call in again, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your comments. We don't have time to take any more calls, do we? No, we don't. From Eisenhower, his Cross of Iron speech, April 1953. Some of you are familiar with this. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. This is not a way of life at all in any true sense. Under the clouds of war, it is humanity hanging on a cross of iron. Dwight Eisenhower, April 1953. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.